Rav Kook's commentary on the Agadata of Masechet Shabbat, the Talmud, Masechet Shabbat, page 23. This is page 71 in the Einayah editions. This is chapter 2, Piska Yudtet. And we started seeing last time. We'll just quickly go through the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Kol ha-shmanim yafim l'dio, v'shemen zayit mina muvchar. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi says that all of the oils are good for making ink, talking about mainly the ink for writing Sifrei Torah, mezuzot. Excuse me. So all the oils are good, but shemen zayit, olive oil, is the best. And we spoke about how oil represents wisdom, olive oil represents Torah, that all the wisdoms are good and important and legitimate, but the Torah, the wisdom of the Torah, is in a different league. Iboy lehu. So the Gemara asks a question. Ligabil o le'ashen? When the Gemara says, where Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi just said, that olive oil is the best for making ink, is that referring to the first part of the process or the second part of the process? What are the two parts of the process? Let's look in Rashi. And notice the details here are important, where Rav Kook is a Doresh, is Darshan, the details. Matzati b'tshuvat ha-Gaonim, in the Gaonic responsa, as you know, most of the Gaonim in the Otsar, most of what we have from the Gaonim is from the either that which is quoted in the Rishonim in their name, we don't have too many books from the Gaonim, or from Otsar ha-Gaonim, that which Rabbi Dr. Binyamin Menashe Levin, Rav Kook's one of his closest students, he went through the Geniza from Cairo and just set up all the chidushim of the Gaonim according to the page in the Masechta. He did it very orderly. It was his life's work. And what in Otsar ha-Gaonim, what most of their, it's actually divided into two. Part of it is questions that were asked regarding explaining the halacha, the Gemara. Right? There's a certain issue in the Gemara that people in a certain country sent a question, usually to Bavel, to ask how to explain the Gemara. And the second is halacha questions. This, apparently, is from the first type. Right? There was a question which was asked of the Gaonim, how to explain this Gemara, that there are two parts, two types of using oil for making ink. One is the gibul, which literally means to knead it, and the other is the ishun, to smoke. Okay, what are the two types? Matzati b'tshuvat ha-Gaonim, explains Rashi, shema'ashnim, the first stage, is that they smoke kli zchuchit be'ashan shemen zayit. They would take not a candle. What's it called? A glass cup. A clay cup. So let's see if someone's at the door. A clay cup filled with olive oil. They would light the olive oil above a glass jar. And the flame that the olive oil made on the glass jar would cause the glass to burn, and that they would either scrape off or it would fall off, and we would be left with ashes. Okay, so that's the first part of the process. And we're talking about how olive oil was used in two different stages of making dio, of making ink. So the first stage is, again, to take oil, burn, turn the glass into ashes, and then scrape off the ashes. And then you would take those ashes, ad shemashchir v'gorero to ha-shachrorit, v'notein bo shemen kim'a. And then you would add a little olive oil to those ashes, and then knead them, u'megabel bo, u'miyabsho, and then you dry it, b'chama, in the sun, u'memacheh oto l'toch adyo, and then you mix that into the ink. In other words, to summarize, there are
questions. Yeah. So, where do the ash come from? If you burn oil inside a glass, you just get sort of like deposits carbon or whatever on the side of the glass.
I guess the carbon, I'm not a scientist, but I guess the carbon that comes out of the glass is not just the carbon which you get from the olive oil. That's the idea. You want the olive oil on the bottom is different from other oils. You could do it with any oil, but apparently the olive oil makes better ash. You're asking why it was done on zchuchit, on glass.
Ash would imply something's burnt, some material is burnt into ash.
It could also be that just their understanding of the word ash is a little bit different from our own. They might just, since ash is basically just carbon anyway.
Right, so pretty thick to scrape it off and put it into...
You do it long enough, they make carbon paper, right? It's thick enough to actually be a whole layer on top of the paper, so to be like carbon on top of the glass also.
The truth is, it might, I'm just thinking, I'm just, you know, throwing out a svara like anybody could throw out a svara. It might be that they were just using the glass. The glass really isn't what it's important. The important is some kind of material from where you could scrape off the ashes.
Is it actually glass, or is it, you said it was kli cheres?
The kli cheres is what held the shemen zayit, the olive oil. Now, the olive oil you lit with a wick, and then above it was glass, and then you'd scrape the ashes off the glass. Once we scraped it off, then it would be mixed, kneaded with more olive oil. That's the second stage of olive oil. So the Gemara is asking, when is olive oil considered better for making this ink? And again, just a reminder what we did last time, ink. Rav Kook says, symbolizes writing. And just so we saw last time that it's good to write books, you know. Rav Lichtenstein wrote his doctorate on Milton, and Rav Riskin, I once heard him say that he's gone through all of the writings of Shakespeare several times. How much more so that the books of the olive oil of the Torah are that much more important. Okay? So... continues the Gemara. Tashma, Detani Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra. So the Gemara asked, Diboilehu legabel ola ashen. When we just said, Rabbi Shmuel ben Levi said that olive oil, all oils are good for making ink, but the best is olive oil. The Gemara asked, is it talking about the first stage of the olive oil, that which you make the ashes? Or is it talking about the second stage of olive oil, where you take the ashes, you mix it with olive oil and a bunch of other things, and that's what you do to make the ink. So the first stage or the second stage. Tashma, come and hear. Detani Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra, kol hashmanim yafim lidyo. Just like we started saying, this is the way he learned it. All of the oils are good for ink. V'shemen zayit min hamuvchar bein ligabel bein la'ashen. In other words, for both of the processes, olive oil is the best. Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra matnila hachi. He taught it a little differently. He says, this is the way I learned it. Kol ha'ashanim yafim lidyo. Here there's some different editions, but this is apparently the accepted edition. All of the smoking is good for making ink. All the oils you can use for smoking, that's the first part of the process. V'shemen zayit min hamuvchar. In other words, that the yichud, the specialness of olive oil, is in the first part of the process. The second part of the process isn't apparently such a big difference between the olive oil and regular oil, but it's the smoking, which is where the importance of olive oil comes out. Let's see what Rav Kook does with this. Door's open. Piska Yutet. Sfarim? Oh, I moved.
Right.
Yeah, I'm okay. Okay. Sfarim sheyachilu bekirbam inyanei chokhma v'da'at hamoilim le'oro shel olam. The books, which include different types of wisdom and knowledge, which help the light of the world. Here he's referring to all the different types of wisdom, religious, secular, Torah, non-religious, literature. Ben sheyifnu el hakodesh bechokhmat Torah kedosha, ben bechokhmot ha'olam shemoilot u'mashlimot bichlal, yimtzu'u shnei ofanim. There are two different types of books, whether religious literature or non-religious literature. They can be divided into two. The first category. By the way, this is one of those topics where, as we've mentioned many times, one of the beautiful things of learning Enaya is you see how Rav Kook applies his Hashkafat Olam, his world philosophy, to even a totally side issue as to how to write books, literature. Those who, I had a student who Dafka won an award for her seminar thesis on the poetry of Rav Kook. And here, you could see, remember, Rav Kook is himself a poet, is himself an author. And keep that in mind as he's writing basically a autobiographical note here, or a diary note, which it's chaval that I didn't think of this to tell this young woman to put into her book, her thesis. Yesh asher b'chol hege v'hege me'akatuv b'sefer yimtza adam chokhma v'dat. There's some books that every single word, every single line, it just blows you away. There's depth, there's knowledge, there's chidush. Right? The obvious example is the Torah. Right? But if you learn a Tosfot, a Rambam, another classic example, I just... there's a professor, Talmid Chacham, Professor Silman, who passed away, and he left a izavon, how do you call it, inheritance of like 15,000 books, and I divided them to different, one of them is to the yeshiva here, to Mitzpek Ramim, to Beit Rav Kook, to Michlelet Orot Yisrael, to Michlelet Herzog. There was enough to go around for anyone. And a couple books I just kept for myself just in the meantime, because they're books that I always wanted to go through. One of them is Rav Soloveitchik's son-in-law, Professor Yitzchak Twersky, has a book about this thick, which I always saw from the outside. I said, wow, that's a thick book on an introduction to the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. Now, I just started learning it, and I noticed that the letters are about this tiny. So it's like, it really could have been twice the size of the book. And it's just an introduction of the Rambam style of writing. And that's a classic example. The Rambam weighs, measures every single word as he writes it. And anybody who learns the Gemara together with the Rambam, like the Briskers, the Soloveitchiks, those who learned with the students of Rav Soloveitchik, with Rav Lichtenstein, etc., they know exactly what we're talking about. So there are some books, also within secular literature, where every word is weighed. Now, I'm not a baki. I'm not a expert in secular literature. Can anybody tell me an example of some author who is known that that he really puts a lot of thought into every single word?
Plato, let's say.
Plato?
Shakespeare okay. is often quoted. There's a debate with Shakespeare whether it's intentional or unintentional. People
or those who darshan,
Exactly. It doesn't matter. My Rebbe in Yeshiva used to claim it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
Because he said the fact you can darshan it, whether he actually knew about it when he was putting it in or not, is also mm-hmm. relevant.
Okay.
And,
he was consciously doing it.
With Homer, it was known that there were there was darshanut in Homer and done on the works of Homer by the Greeks.
I know. What I know about Homer is that there are so many different gersaot and changes that have been made over the centuries and between the translations, and so it's hard to darshan. That's
translations,
right? Also translations, and also in copying the original text, there are a lot of mistakes.
That's true. I mean, there are a lot, but I mean,
okay, let's go on. Omnam, hamishpatim haklaliim haolim mikibutz hayidiyot. But in addition to all those important details of ideas, od yoter nizgavim ad shanitzotzot shel yediyot apratiyot nasim kimishamshim lahagia lidei haor hagadol hamitkabetz mikol yediyot apratiyot hamoilot yachad aval kol davar leatzmo gam ken yesh lo erech moil. When you read a book of history, I imagine that when a historian writes, he checks out every fact, he checks out all the different opinions. Anyone who's read the serious history books, you know, you read the footnotes, they're twice as long as the book itself, and every detail is important.
And then the next guy comes along and says, he didn't check this, he didn't check that.
The general idea of the summary of why the Roman Empire fell, or why Churban Beit HaMikdash fell, or why, in other words, the end of the chapter is also, that's even more important. Okay? In other words, even in a book where their details are important, don't just look at the trees, you got to look at the forest. And also, in a really good book, don't just look at the forest, also notice the trees. Okay? Now, this is true in religious writing, in the Torah, obviously. There's a machloket, which is connected to our sugya, between the Radak and the Malbim and others, whether every word of Nevuah was dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the prophet. They ask the opinion of the Malbim, as opposed to the Radak and Rashi and all those who say Kefal Adavar B'Milim Shonot, right, that the Navi is just repeating himself over in poetic words. They say that it's really the words of the prophet, and the main thing that comes from God is the idea. Okay? But for sure, according to the first opinion, that of the Malbim, and how much more so in the Torah, where all religious people agree that every word is dictated by God, and we know all these codes and gematriot and skipping letters and things like that, then obviously, in addition to the general, you got to learn the individual details also. Ulifamim. Sometimes, kotet sefer shel chokhma, somebody who's writing a book of wisdom, yikach lo derech kazeh she'irbe dvarim rabim yiduim, he'll write a whole mashal. A mashal is a good example, because usually, and the Rambam writes this in his introduction to the God for the Perplexed, he writes, don't ever get over-focused. Don't get caught up in a mashal, an allegory. The main point is the bottom line. In other words, don't ask why in the mashal the man was wearing a red hat or not wearing a red hat. Now, we know, those who learn Agadah, knows that the Maharal does deduce from what color hat. If it was mentioned what color it was, apparently that's important. The Maharsha does it, the Ein Yaakov does it. On the other hand, the Rambam very much is against this. He says a mashal is a mashal. To get the general gist of the allegory. Don't get hung up on the details. Af she'in be'atzmam shum to'elet pratit. And by the way, if this is in rabbinic literature, when we talk about midrashim, so obviously when we're talking about a novel or something like that, you'll find authors who, they have a point that they want to make, but 90%+ of the book is
scenery.
Blah, blah. Scenery. Okay. Ripud, they say in slang. Stuffing. They say that in English.
What comes to him in terms of his imagination of how it ought to look.
Right. And that's one of the problems where the imagination of the author, Rav Kook, is going to say, if it's a brilliant author, and how much more so a famous rabbi or a prophet or a great thinker, then even his filler is significant. On the other hand, somebody who's maybe doesn't pay attention to all the details, there's this whole genre of different authors like Yochi Brandis, and in English I saw As a Driven Leaf, Milton Steinberg was his name.
Yeah, that was
right. Where it's historic, it's historically based. But there's a lot of filler there. A lot of filler. So much filler that obviously it's so inaccurate that when they start putting in things about romance and things that, you know.
It's called artistic license.
Oh. So this is where Rav Kook is warning us about the problems of that poetic license. Once we're on the topic, I'll also mention this regarding poetry. Because Rav Kook, he didn't write novels, but he did write poetry. Now, in poetry also, it's actually mentioned in Sefer HaKuzari. Chabal, I didn't bring it. Sefer HaKuzari asks, why did David HaMelech, when he's writing songs, or Bichlal, in Az Yashir, you'll find things that don't go according to the beat? Right? Anybody who knows the waving of the lulav in Kilo Olam Chazdo, Hudu Lashem, some have long words, some have less, or Kilo Olam Chazdo Psukei Dezimra. That's three words. Kilo Olam Chazdo. Lo Seniflo Gdolot Levado. There are a lot more three words. Kilo Olam Chazdo. Kilo Olam Chazdo. And then there's one about, yeah, long one about Ogbele Chabashan, and you know, like 10 words there, and then, right, and it doesn't fit in with the tune. And my grandfather, Alav HaShalom, as a composer, he always used to complain about that, you know. And
according to the Dat Yachid, that the, words,
even
the
heard,
prophets are written on subway walls.
I heard that one composer even changes sometimes the words of David HaMelech so that they rhyme. Mm. I once heard a song, Ki chizak brichei sha'araich, berach bekirbech banaich. So that it should rhyme, instead of banaich bekirbech. In other words, it's like, let's correct David HaMelech. And
just improve.
So the Kuzari was asked the question, actually the king, the Kuzar asked the rabbi, the Chaver, he asked him, you know, what's wrong with Tehillim? And the Kuzari says, it's a matter of principle, that the most important thing is the tochen, is the idea. That's a lot more important than the rhythm, right? You break a rhythm here, you break a rhythm there, that really, rhythm is something external. It's not tchani, it's chitzoni, okay? And on the other hand, poetry, and I remember this from in elementary school, everybody remembers that when they teach us poetry, as a young kid, they teach us to rhyme, right? And I remember when my father, he mentioned back problems, my father, when he was the principal of a school, he had slipped a disc, so he was on his back for a month, he didn't come to school. So obviously the kids in school, the teachers told the kids to write get well cards to Rabbi Schwat. And I'll never forget one. I was in like eighth grade. It's like the funniest thing I ever saw. A kid, first grade, second grade, wrote, Dear Rabbi Schwat, I hope you get well soon because you are not a baboon. He found something to rhyme. And it's like Bayit and Zayit in all the Shirei Eretz Yisrael.
It was just monkeying around.
And when you get older and you start learning different types of poetry, and your first reaction is, hey, that doesn't rhyme, you know? And the teacher explains that in higher poetry, there is a rhythm, but rhyme, you shouldn't maktin, you shouldn't shrink big ideas just to meet a ketzev, a rhythm. And if you notice in the songs of Rav Kook, for example, there's a famous song that's sung in Merkaz HaRav on Motzei Shabbat, where there is a rhyme, but on some of the lines, the number of syllables aren't identical. And it's very clear that's what Rav Kook is saying here. You know, it's more important is, you know, ideas, the details are important, the filler is important, and that's why I mentioned poetry is a good example. And in poetry, it's very clear that there's filler there. In other words, even though it's not sung baboon, but you know, there is some kind of ilut, some kind of artificialness, at least in one or two, at least in some of the lines, just that they should rhyme, okay? Which obviously is not an ideal, okay? That's a filler where the general idea is important, and don't get hung up on the details, okay? ולפעמים כותב ספר של חוכמה ייקח לו דרך כזה שהרבה דברים רבים ידועים. Even he'll take facts that everybody knows. Like I said, in a historical novel, for example. Or even, by the way, in a shiur of halacha. Very often, anybody who's taught halacha knows this problem. Because on the one hand, before the holidays, you have to review the halachot, even though you review the same halachot every year. And there is the risk of being boring and losing the attention of the students. And everyone's just going to say after the first 5 minutes, hey, I know this already, and they just tune out. They start, you know, SMSing, whatever they do, crocheting. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's taught halacha knows that you got to always mix in chidushim, surprises. The best thing, what I try and do, is the first halacha, have it a surprise. Something that nobody knows. I wrote in my Pinan, Rosh Yehudi, last year. It was exactly a year ago. So Rosh Yeshiva up in the north called me. He says, in the halachot of the Arbat Aminim, I mentioned there the halacha that The Mishnah Berurah says that if you take the four species with your ring, you forget to take off a ring, you have to do it again. She says without a bracha. Rav Avad Yosef and Sfaradim say with a bracha. You have to mamash make a bracha again. You weren't yotze. I'm sorry. Rav Avadya says that b'di'evet you're yotze. The Mishnah Berurah says you're not yotze b'di'evet, but don't make a bracha because it might be a bracha levatala.
What's the point? Because your ring is a half-set.
Exactly. Like a chatzitza. If you go into a mikveh with a ring, so it's chotze. It's a, how do you say?
It's a
barrier in between your body and the water. So too, you're not allowed to have a barrier in between your hand and the Arbat Minim. So this Rosh Hashiva in the north calls me up and he says, is that the most important halakha of Arbat Minim? Yeah, that's a machloket. And I answer him exactly what I said now. If you just bring halakhot that everybody knows, nobody's going to read it. You know, if it's for Bali Tshuva, don't know anything, you know, so within 250 words, you can't cover anything. So, but you have to have that mix between things of chidush and review. So here Rav Kook is mentioning there is sometimes a necessity to review things that everybody knows, even if it's no big chidush. Av shein be'atzmam shum toelet pratit. Rak mikibutzam yachad kishyishalem atziyur ya'aleh eze ra'yon klali shel toelet. Sometimes, like we said, a classic example is a novel, in a poem, where not every rhyme and not every line and not every detail in the novel is important. Nevertheless, the general idea is something important. Ha'ofen so these are the two types of books. Ha'ofen arishon sheyesh to'elet ve'or chokhma ve'chol chelek shel sifrut bifnei atzmo. The first type of book where the author really puts time and effort and ideas into every single line, Yarech Hashemin Le'ashan. That's symbolized in the first aspect of using the olive oil, where the olive oil itself, and this might be the answer to your question, I just noticed now, the olive oil itself, that is the ashes that we're scraping off of the glass. In other words, where the olive oil itself and the ashes, what are ashes? It's crumbs. It's particles, right? All those many, many particles have ta'am, have importance. Klomar etzem achomer hanivzar, the very material itself. Shemimenu yavoa dvarim b'sefer kol echad mem bifnei atzmo. Like again, the Torah is the classic example where every single line, every single word, every time it says et, as opposed to without it, or ve'et, and every vav, and Rabbi Akiva was darsh, and this and that. You could tell where it's coming from. In other words, a person could say, Sach hakol, I'm burning oil. Why should I spend a lot of money on expensive olive oil if I can use canola or second-rate oil, and it'll come out the same thing? Rav Kook is saying no. In the Torah, or Lahavdil, a good author, even the ashes, even the small particles, are very important. And the better the raw material is, the better the details are as well. Shumish mishmana shel chokhma v'torah. Omnam amistapek b'inyan klali. Sheyotze rak miklalut ha-sefer. On the other hand, somebody who's just writing a general, like I said, a novel. He has a general idea, but the details of the mashal, they're not really important. Valpira ayon echari kariu mo'il yarchiv dvarim rabim. And he adds a lot of different details. Rak leman yitzayer yafe rayono hanirtzalo. A lot of filler, a lot of blah blah, just to make it interesting, to sell books maybe. Shekol inyanim amyuchadim abayim l'archava ein lehem inyan. There is no ideal in this material itself. It's just when it's mixed with other material, i.e. the important idea, that's what gives it the importance. So that, Rav Kook is saying, is explaining, that is the symbolism of the second stage of the oil, of the gibul, where you mix after you scraped off the ashes, and then you go and mix it with other oil and other materials. Rav Kook says, that's the symbolism of the second type of book, where there's a lot of filler. It's mixed with a lot of things. I'll give an example. Rav Kook, in one of his zigrot, wrote a letter, if I remember correctly, it's to Rav Meir Bar Ilan, who, as we all know, was the son of the Netziv. And he was a Talmid Chacham in his own right. And he was the first editor of HaTzofeh. I think they called it HaTorah in those days. And he went on vacation, or to Chutz Laretz, or I don't remember exactly what the Nesibot were, but they replaced him with another editor for a short period, a couple of weeks. And Rav Kook wrote to Rav Meir Bar Ilan, come back quick. Because there was an article in this religious newspaper where it was creative writing, and apparently there was a messer, there was an idea to the story. But Rav Kook writes, the readers don't have to know how red the cheeks of the young woman were. Right? And he's quoting from the story. In other words, there's some details which they're not sanua, they're not modest, they're not, you want to put in filler, you want to, a lot of times it takes away. Not only you think you're adding, but you got to be very, very careful. Because even if the story in general has a good, important message, and you're just filling it in again, either for the poetry or for the novel, but you got to be very, very careful. Okay. And here also, the Torah, Rav Kook here is relating to the poetic license. Let's go on. Val pira ayon echad ikari umowil yarchiv dvarim rabim, rak leman yitzayer yafer ayono hanirtzalo, shekol inyanim amyuchadim abaim larchava ein lehem inyan. Ulifamim od yaapilu al hanefesh tachat asher arayon haklali ya'ir v'yoil. Like I said before, sometimes these details, they actually take away from the ramah, from the level of the taharav, the tzniut, of the worth of the story. כי הציורים המתרחבים שאין להם תעודה של חוכמה בכל חלק בפני עצמו. If we're talking about a book or a poem or a novel that doesn't put time and effort and symbolism into every single detail, יתו לפעמים גם כן מנתיבות הצדק, inevitably they will sometimes veer away from the ideology of justice, ויצאירו לפעמים ציורים שמשחיתים את ההוגים במוסרם ודעותיהם, אף כי הכוונה כללי לטובה תהיה. Right? Their intentions were good, but sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, you want to make it sellable, you want to make it readable. I don't want to mention names of modern religious writers, because I really don't have time to read, so I don't know, you know, who does it and who doesn't and who to what extent. But today, Baruch Hashem, there are some very good, important, again, I don't want to mention any names, writers, but they also have to be very important. It's not just enough that there's a moral to the story, and that in general that it's clean, or that it's not dirty, right? That's also a Rama of you know, a certain level of literature that... Or that the hero wears a kippah, or that he's a bal tshuva, or something like that. It's not a question of whether a person is wearing talit and tefillin. That was one of the... I spoke after the movie Ushpizin came out. And, you know, it's a very good movie. They're very important things. But one of the points that I mentioned was when all of the Spielbergs and Coen brothers and Warner brothers and... Gershwins and all those Hollywood Jews come on Aliyah and will be making their films from Hollywood, the movies don't have to be about etrogim or about talit and tefillin. But the messer, the bottom line of what is the moral of the story, that's what's important. Rav Kook is pointing out not just the moral. You got to be careful of the details as well. Zeu domel lemashamesh b'shemen rak legabel. Maybe here, because I want to, the next paragraph is also sort of connected and we're running out of time, and I want to cover it also. Let's do the Piska Kaf. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra matni lahachi. He, Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra, again, what was the first explanation? The first explanation is that Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra, that all of the oils are good, especially olive oil, for what? For both types of literature. Also for literature where all the details are important, and also in literature where just the general idea, like the mashal or the novel, is important. In both of those topics, the Torah's wisdom, that of the olive oil, is better. Rav Shmuel, according to the second opinion, Kola ashanim yafim lidyo, v'shemen zayit mina muvchar, that the main difference that you see in the Torah, between the Torah and other wisdoms, between Torah and other literatures, lahavdil, is in the ashan, is in the first topic, where every single detail, Rashi explains one way, Ramban explains it another way, the Radak in a third way, the Sforno, everyone, we weigh and examine every single word, and in this category, there's no comparison between the knowledge of olive oil, of the Torah, and the literature of the Torah, and rabbis, and, like we said, the Rambam, and how the Rishonim are medayek, are deduced from every word in the Mishnah and every word from the Gemara, as opposed to secular literature, where again, I think we all had English lit teachers in 9th or 10th grade, who some read the Cliff Notes or the Monarch Notes, and some forced symbolism, maybe some was real, maybe some wasn't, but the bottom line is that what Phineas was wearing really, maybe there is some symbolism, but there's no comparison between that and the details of the Torah, where we sit up till 2, 3 in the morning in the Beit Midrash, night after night, generation after generation, poring over why the Rambam used this word and not that word. Right? And here, and that's how Rav Kook explains, that according to the second opinion, that the main difference of, where you can see the difference of the Torah, is not in the Mishalim, but in the details, and the importance of the details, again, which is symbolized in the oil, the first stage of the oil, where again, you burn the oil itself, and that makes those particles of the ashes, where there's importance and value in the particles, in the details. And that's part of the beauty of learning Torah. And that's just another reason, aside from the mitzvah, and aside from the spirituality, and mevili de ma'aseh, one of the other, if you have to decide between reading a newspaper or a novel and learning Torah, this is another major difference.
Education.